Welcome and thank you for standing by. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. During the question-and-answer session, please press star one on your touch-tone phone. I'd also like to inform parties that today's conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. Now I'd like to turn today's conference over to Mr. Brady Phillips. Thank you, sir. You may begin.
Thank you, Ashley. Good morning, everyone, and thank you for joining this monthly climate update call, which is part of the suite of climate services NOAA provides to governments, businesses, academia, and the public to support informed decision-making. Again, my name is Brady Phillips, a public affairs officer with NOAA's Office of Communications in Washington, D.C., and I'll be facilitating the call today. And in the call, we'll have three short presentations followed by an operator-assisted question and answer session. A copy of the presentation that our speakers will be following and presenting to can be found online at www.ncdc.noaa.gov/SOTC/BREFINGS. Our first presenter is Jay Crouch, a climate scientist at NOAA's National Centers for Environmental Information in Asheville, North Carolina. We'll provide a summary of the March U.S. and global climate highlights. Our next presenter will be Nina Oakley, assistant research climatologist and a California climate specialist located at the Western Regional Climate Center in Reno, Nevada. We'll discuss the snowpack and water conditions in the western U.S. this spring. And our final presenter will be John Gottschalk, the chief of the NOAA Climate Prediction Center's Operational Predictions Branch in College Park, Maryland, who will provide us an El Nino and La Nina update, as well as the monthly and seasonal temperature, precipitation, and drought outlooks over the coming 3 months. We'll begin with Jake Crouch from NOAA's National Centers for Environmental Information. Jake?
Hi, everyone. Good morning this morning. I guess I'll start off speaking to slide number two, talking about the March 2016 global report that was released on Tuesday. The March average temperature for the global surface was 1.22 degrees Celsius above the 20th century average. This was the warmest March on record for the globe, and I might sound like a broken record at this point, but this was the 11th consecutive record warm month for the global surface. This 11-month streak is the longest such streak in the 137 years that we've been keeping data at NOAA. Looking at that monthly temperature departure, that was also the largest monthly departure from average for any month with data dating back to 1880. The land surface and the ocean surface were both record warm for March. When we average across the globe, the land surface temperature was 2.33 degrees Celsius above average, and the ocean surface was 0.81 degrees Celsius above average. The map on the right side of the slide shows how these temperatures broke down across the globe. Areas in the brightest red were record warm for the month, and areas in the darkest blue were record cold. We see large areas of the Indian Ocean, the African continent, as well as parts of the Pacific Ocean were record warm. I did want to mention the area just to the northeast of Australia. That's where the Great Barrier Reef is located, and the record warm temperatures there have been causing one of the largest bleaching events for the Great Barrier Reef. We did have some areas of the globe that were cooler than average, notably the North Atlantic, as well as parts of Western Europe, where France and the United Kingdom were cooler than average. We also saw an area of record cold temperatures in the southern oceans between South America and Antarctica, where we did see sea ice expanding quite rapidly in Antarctica. On the other side of the globe, in the Arctic, Arctic sea ice extent reached its maximum extent in late March, and that was the smallest maximum extent that we saw in terms of sea ice in the Arctic. Moving on to slide number three to talk about global temperatures for the first 3 months of 2016. This shows a time series of January through March average temperatures back to 1880. We can see that 2016 is way ahead of the pack in terms of where we are at this point in the year. We're 1.15 degrees Celsius above average, and we're about 0.3 degrees Celsius above the previous record for the period, which was 2015. And just to note that 2015 did end up being the warmest year on record so far, and we're quite a bit ahead of where we were at this point last year in terms of globally average temperatures. Moving on to slide number 4 to talk about what happened here in the U.S. in 2016, it was a warm month for the lower 48. The contiguous U.S. average temperature was 6 degrees Fahrenheit above the 20th century average, and this ranked as the fourth warmest March on record. The map on the left shows statewide temperature ranks, so a rank of 122 would be record warm, a rank of 1 would be record cold. We can see that every state was above average in terms of March temperatures, so the warmth spread the country from coast to coast. We did see much above average temperatures across parts of the country, including the Rockies, Great Plains, Midwest, and East Coast. On the daily scale, if we look at temperature records occurring at the station level, there were 22 times more daily warm temperature records broken compared to cold daily temperature records. So the warmth is widespread, and many locations did see record warmth, even though no state had ranked as record warm for the month. In terms of precipitation, the contiguous U.S. average precipitation was the 26th wettest, so on the wetter side of history. The map shows states that were wetter than average in green, so we did see some wetter than average conditions across the West Coast, which Nina will speak to. And we did see some wetter than average conditions across the Southern Plains and lower Mississippi River Valley and Midwest. The lower Mississippi River Valley did deal with significant flooding in early and late March. Memphis, Tennessee, and Little Rock, Arkansas were both record wet for the month. We did see below average precipitation across the Southwest. New Mexico had its driest March on record with only 8% of average precipitation. And we did see below average precipitation across parts of the Mid-Atlantic as well. Looking at the U.S. Drought Monitor on slide number 5 that was released this morning, about 15.4% of the contiguous U.S. is in drought, and this is up slightly compared to early March. We did see drought improvement across the Pacific Northwest, parts of California, and the Southern Plains. Nina will speak to the drought conditions in the West in great detail in a moment. We did see drought worsen in parts of the Southwest, Central Plains, or in the Central Plains in Kansas, we did have a record large wildfire during the month of March that burned over 400,000 acres, and that was a state record for Kansas. We did see some slight drought worsening in parts of the Northern Plains and Mid-Atlantic. And in Hawaii, we have been record and near-record dry for locations in Hawaii during 2016 so far, and that has led to drought development across the state. And with that, I will pass it off to Nina.
Thanks, Jake. We're on slide 6 now. April 1st is typically the peak snowpack for much of the West and an important date in water resources management. The April 1st snowpack value is the value off which many water allocation decisions are made. So when we compare snow water equivalent percent of normal from April 1st this year on the right to the same date last year on the left, we see the snowpack is in much better shape this year throughout the West, with most regions experiencing near to slightly above normal snowpack. Above normal snowpack in the Cascades and Northern Rockies eased drought conditions in the Pacific Northwest over the course of the winter season. The improvement from 2015 to 2016 is especially notable for California and Nevada, the regions that have been experiencing persistent drought in the West. In the Sierra Nevada, shown in detail at the bottom, snowpack this year was 85% of normal, a huge gain on the record low 5% of normal snow water equivalent observed last year. While the 85% of normal snowpack is certainly beneficial to drought amelioration, it is not the normal snowpack that Californians and Nevadans were hoping for to make significant drought recovery. Moving on to slide 7. An interesting thing to note this year is that for many places in the West, snowpack peaked in mid to late March, which is highlighted in blue on the figures, rather than in late March to late April, as it typically does. The top graph shows data from a snowtail station in the Northern Cascades at 6,500 feet. The median maximum snowpack is in late April, which is shown by the red line where it starts to decline. However, this year, snowmelt began in late March, as shown in the blue line. This station had well above normal snow water equivalent this winter, while other lower elevation stations in the region were closer to normal snow water equivalent. The bottom graph shows data from a snowtail at Donner Summit in the Sierra Nevada at 6,800 feet. And peak snowpack at this station is typically near April 1st, shown in red, though the current year, shown in blue, saw melt beginning slightly earlier. The early snowmelt raises concerns for water resources, especially in basins that do not have storage, as well as environmental concerns. This early melt is likely due to the above-normal temperatures observed in April to date, portions of March, and also a relatively warm and dry February in the West. Moving on to slide 8. These images give a regional perspective of the early snowmelt over the first half of April, with April 1st on the left and April 15th on the right. You can see a notable reduction in the percent of normal snowpack over just these 2 weeks. It's had very warm temperatures in the West the past 2 weeks. Moving on to slide number 9. California reservoirs on the top saw a boost over this winter season, mainly in the north, where Shasta, the state's largest reservoir, as well as Oroville and Folsom are all above average storage. Several important reservoirs, however, remain below normal storage, especially in the central and southern part of the state. While the increase in storage helps to ameliorate drought conditions in some ways, for example, the state water project deliveries for California were increased to 45% of requested in March, many drought impacts still remain, such as severe groundwater depletion in the Central Valley and environmental impacts such as damage to forests and fisheries in California, and Southern California had a much drier than normal winter. And the above normal holdings in several of the large reservoirs does not mitigate the impacts of the multi-year drought in California and Nevada. On the bottom of the slide, west-wide, Nevada, New Mexico, and Arizona see the greatest departures from below average in their reservoir storage. And while Arizona and New Mexico had eased out of drought for a period early in the winter, moderate drought conditions were reintroduced in March after a very dry February and March. And thanks. Turning it over to John to give you the climate outlook.
Thank you, Nina. We start with slide 10, focusing first on the plot in the upper left. What's shown in the upper left are average ocean surface temperature departures from normal or anomalies over the past 30 days. The warm colors, yellows and reds, indicate warmer than average ocean temperatures, surface ocean temperatures, and the blue shades indicate below average temperatures. And if you look across the middle of the image, you can still see El Nino conditions remain in place. We have positive departures from normal, ranging from 1 to as much as 2 degrees above normal over most of the central and eastern Pacific still. These ocean surface temperature anomalies have decreased, however, from what we saw, of course, during the earlier in the winter and during the early spring months as well. We also notice above average ocean surface temperatures are in place across the western coast of North America, from Alaska along the west coast towards Hawaii, and also along the east coast, in particular off the coast of the Mid-Atlantic and northeast over the past 30 days. As I mentioned before, we still continue to have an El Nino advisory in place. Although El Nino is weakening, we still have conditions both in the ocean and in the surface, in the atmosphere, that are consistent with El Nino conditions. Now, if we focus on the plot in the lower left, which is the latest ENSO forecast for three categories of ENSO, El Nino in the red bars, ENSO neutral conditions in the green bars, and La Nina conditions in the blue bars, what's shown on the y-axis is indicated by is the probability of that category and time increases, three-month overlapping seasons on the x-axis. And if you take a look during the later spring, we expect the probabilities for El Nino to decrease. As I mentioned, El Nino is forecast to continue weaken. We expect to have a transition to ENSO neutral conditions likely during the spring. But by the spring or early summer of 2016, you can see that during the May, June, July, and June, July, and August periods where the green bars are highest out of the three categories. What you will also notice is a rapid increase in height of the blue bars, indicating higher probabilities for La Nina as they move in towards the summer. And as we go through the autumn months and into the early part of the winter months, we have issued a La Nina watch, which indicates La Nina conditions could develop anytime over the next few months. And what we noticed here during the July, August, September period, the probabilities for La Nina increased greater than 50%. And by the time we get towards the later fall and early winter, probabilities for La Nina conditions are approaching or near 70% probability. So we go to slide 11 to turn to the forecast. First, for monthly, for the month of May, temperature on the left, precipitation on the right. As you can see, we're favoring the warm colors indicate favored or enhanced chances or odds for above average temperatures for May mean temperatures. And we're favoring above average temperatures for the far west, Alaska, along the northern tier of the United States, and for the eastern third of the country as well. Probabilities are highest for mean monthly temperatures to be in the above normal category for the south coast of Alaska to the Pacific Northwest, where we continue to see above average ocean temperatures at the coastline. With respect to below average temperatures, the only area that we're favoring for that for the monthly mean is for across parts of the southwest and southern high plains, where some indications during the middle of the month of May and recent soil moisture conditions favor potential probability, the slight tilt in the odds towards below normal temperatures in that region. The white areas for both the temperature and precipitation forecasts are referred to equal chances or 33% probability for either of the three categories. If we move to the right-hand side for the May precipitation, this is for the probability for total May precipitation amounts. In general, favoring weak probabilities or low probabilities or just a slight shift in the odds towards the above average category from an area from the western, central western United States southeastward to include parts of the Rockies, the southern and central plains, and to a lesser extent along the Gulf Coast and lower mid-Atlantic region. The greatest probabilities are for the region from the east central Rockies southeastward to Texas and across Florida. For also favoring above average precipitation for the parts of the west and north coast of Alaska. If we move to the next slide, slide 12, which shows the seasonal forecast, conditions favored for the May, June, and July period, so the late spring into the early summer, temperature again on the left, precipitation on the right. You could say similar patterns from the monthly forecast, favoring above average temperatures for much of the west, along the northern tier of the country, and also across the eastern, most of the eastern part of the country, the highest probabilities for above-average seasonal mean temperatures are for the south coast of Alaska and for New England. Equal chances, as indicated, and lower probabilities where soil moisture considerations play a role early in the summer and late spring months across the center and interior part of the country. With respect to precipitation, similar sort of map to the monthly forecast, favored only a slight tilt in the odds to above average precipitation along the southern tier of the United States. The highest threat or the highest probability for above average precipitation is across parts of the interior Rockies and also the north coast of Alaska. The only area favored below average precipitation during this three-month season is residual El Nino impact for potential for dryness across parts of the central Great Lakes. If we move to slide 13 to wrap up, the latest U.S. seasonal drought outlook is shown here. Brown shades indicate where drought is expected to persist. Gray shades indicate where drought is expected to improve, and green shades indicate where drought is likely to be removed. And the time of the year across much of the plains and northern Rockies is a wet time of the year, so we're expecting or favoring improvement or removal of drought conditions where climatological rains and short-term prediction and also longer-term predictions as shown in the previous outlooks for above-average precipitation favor either improvement or removal across much of the smaller regions in the central interior part of the country as well as the northern Rockies. The dry season is commenced across the southwest or soon across the southwest and parts of the majority of the west, so any above-average precipitation is likely to be some, light and is not likely to produce significant impacts to the drought conditions. And so with that, I'll turn it back to Brady.
Thanks, John. We'll now take specific questions from the call participants. Again, please be sure to indicate who you'd like to answer the question if possible. And operator, can you please remind the participants how they can ask a question and queue up the first call?
We will now begin the question and answer session. If you would like to ask a question, please press star one. Please record your name clearly when prompted. One moment, please, for your first question. Your first question comes from Craig Miller with KQED. Your line is open.
Thanks very much. I'm curious. This is probably for Nina. The drought monitor still has much of California in the two most severe drought categories, extreme or exceptional. We didn't quite hit average in a lot of places, but we did have a lot better winter than last year. I know we've got a multi-year precipitation deficit. Can you kind of explain a little more, you know, what the justification is for maintaining those two most severe categories for most of the state? Is it the temperatures or what?
Yeah, one of the things, as I mentioned, is that even though we've seen improvement in the reservoir storage, there are still impacts such as the impacts to fisheries. We've had major beetle kill in the forests in the Sierra Nevada, and the trees haven't recovered yet, so it'll take some time to see the forest start to recover from multi-year drought. And so even though we've put some water back in the reservoirs, we haven't seen those environmental impacts start to recover completely yet. Also, the groundwater replenishment in parts of the Central Valley has been slow to occur, and we haven't seen that come back yet. So really waiting for some of those impacts to start to turn before that extreme drought will be removed.
How much do the above average temperatures, either currently or forecast, have to do with it?
Let me think about that for a moment. They definitely exacerbate the drought and the early snowmelt I mentioned, so I don't know if the temperatures are keeping things in drought. I can't really speak to that. I can look more into it if you'd like, and we can talk over email. But I don't participate in the drought monitor authoring, so I'd have to follow up with those folks how they're incorporating temperature in here. But the main reason is that a lot of the impacts that we're seeing from the multi-year drought haven't broken yet.
Okay, thanks.
Again, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star 1 and record your name clearly when prompted. One moment, please, for your next question. Your next question comes from Curtis Alexander with San Francisco Chronicle. Your line is open.
Thank you very much. I think this is probably a question for John. And John, I know you've talked about this before, but at this point, is there any better idea of how strong the La Nina will be and what the potential impacts will be regarding precipitation and primarily for the drought in California?
Yeah, thanks for the question. To answer your first part of that, we really don't have much information to really make a definitive statement about how strong the La Nina will be. We're favoring La Nina conditions to develop, but that's still even that is in a probabilistic sense, as shown in the plot that I showed before. And so to take it a step farther on the strength of any La Nina is really out of the scope of where we're at right now. Now, with respect to your second point, with the impacts, if we do go into a La Nina condition, typically I'll focus more towards the fall and during the winter months. Typically, as we get into La Nina conditions, but typically the impacts from ENSO in general are stronger during the winter season. And typically across the southern part of the continental United States, contiguous United States, we tend to see drier than normal conditions. And that includes Southern California. And depending on each La Nina case, there's a lot of variability as you go further north towards central and northern California. But there's a tendency for drier than normal conditions across the southern part of the United States. And especially across parts of the southeast, extreme southeast. As far as above average precipitation, typically during La Niñas, again, as we get the focus just on the winter months, we tend to favor above average precipitation across the Pacific Northwest and areas in the northern Rockies, and also wetter than average conditions in the Ohio Valley and also parts of the Great Lakes region.
Thank you very much.
As a reminder, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star 1.
Okay, this is the last call for questions. If not, I will begin to end the call. And while I'm talking about a couple of upcoming events, if anybody has a further question, please press the star 1 and we'll get your last question. Oh, actually, we do have a few more. Hang on 1 second.
Your next question comes from Patricia Kitchen with Newsday. Your line is open.
Hi, yes, thank you so much. I have two questions, actually. The first one, is there any sense of what kind of impact La Nina might have on Atlantic hurricane season, especially, you know, later, towards the later part of hurricane season? And I'll ask that one first, and then I'll go on to my second one. John, I think you're...
Sure, this is... John Gottschalk here at the Climate Prediction Center. First thing I wanted to say is that our official hurricane outlook, we'll have a media advisory with that, and will be released on May 27th. To answer your question, the general consensus in the research and the historical data is that typically La Nina will impact the Atlantic hurricane season with more activity. But again, as I mentioned, please stay tuned for our official outlook on May 27th.
Uh-huh. Okay, great. Thank you. And also, what are the conditions that are favoring above normal temperatures for May and, you know, the May, June, July period, especially we're always interested in that Long Island section of New York, so, in, you know, that northeast area.
Right. There's a few things. There, even though El Nino is weakening, there still tends to be a warmer-than-average signature across parts of the northern tier of the country. Mm-hmm. So that's one factor. But another factor, actually, is some of the warmer ocean temperatures that we're seeing across much of the North Atlantic. That's also a factor. And a number of the we also make use of short-term climate prediction models. These are similar models to weather forecasts, but these are run out further into time. And we can make use of those, and the overwhelming consensus among those is for a warmer than average May, June, and July season.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Sure.
Your next question comes from Craig Miller with KQED. Your line is open.
Sorry, it's a little embarrassing because I just keep forgetting this, but in order to convert those like 33, 40, 50 lines, like if I'm looking at slide 12, for example, the way you express that, to convert those areas to actual probabilities, can you remind me how to do that?
John, I think you're on mute.
Oh, sorry. Yes, I was. Sorry about that. Apologize. Colors on the map are actually probabilities. So the area, let's say the highest area, the darker red that's shown in New England, for example, that indicates in that area there's greater than a 60% probability of above normal temperatures and a 33% chance of near normal temperatures. And then whatever that difference is, I haven't done it in my head, you know, right here, but basically whatever remaining percentage is would be the favored, the probability for below normal temperatures.
Okay. All right.
Work
thanks.
The same way across the West.
Okay. Thanks. I just keep forgetting how that works.
Sure.
As a reminder, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star 1 and please record your name clearly when prompted. Your next question comes from Curtis Alexander with San Francisco Chronicle. Your line is open.
Hi, thanks again. This is a question for Nina. Nina, you had mentioned that the earlier melt from the Sierra had raised concerns about water resources. I was hoping you could elaborate on why that raises concern, and was also wondering that if temperatures continue to rise with global warming trends, if that concern is going to become more present and more grave.
Yeah, so with the earlier snow melt, you're not, it's not a slow release of the of the water down the streams into the reservoirs. And so so we're moving more of that that snowmelt into the reservoirs at an earlier time. And then as far as into the and so the impacts mainly for water resources, if you have a if you have a basin that doesn't have a reservoir in it, you're moving all that water to its final destination, whether it's the ocean or it's one of the internal basins here in Nevada. And so you're moving all that water through where it might be diverted off of the stream at an earlier time in the season, which can be difficult for agriculture later into the summer. And then there's also some environmental impacts of that. You're moving all your cold water down the streams early in the season. So when we move into the latter part of the summer into the early fall, we can see rising stream temperatures, which can affect the fisheries in the rivers and streams because we're not moving that water at a slower rate and keeping the streams cool. And then, certainly if we are seeing warming temperatures and a continued increase in snow level and earlier melt times, that would certainly cause future impacts. Is that sufficiently answer?
It does. Thank you.
Okay.
As a reminder, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star 1. One moment, please, for your next question. And I am showing no further questions at this time.
Okay, thank you very much. If there are no further questions, I'm going to remind the participants about some upcoming releases. So the April Climate Highlights for the U.S. will be released on May 6th, and the April Climate Highlights for the Globe will be released on May 18th. Our next monthly climate call will be on Thursday, May 19th at 11 o'clock a.m. Eastern Time. Also, as John alluded to, NOAA will issue its 2016 Atlantic Hurricane Outlook on Wednesday, May 27th. A separate media advisory will be put out for that call. And also in the days preceding that, NOAA will also issue its Pacific, both Central and Eastern Pacific Basin Hurricane Outlooks as well. If in the interim you do have further questions, please email me at brady.phillips, that's brady.phillips at NOAA.gov. And this concludes the call. Thank you.
Thank you for your participation in today's conference call. You may disconnect at this time.